Good morning, everyone. It's Todd.
And Julie.
With Grizzly Confessions. You know, normally I start our podcast kind of with an upbeat tempo, but I don't know that we can do that this morning.
Yeah, it's crazy when I don't know.
I just think, folks, you know, and I have so many thoughts. So before I start getting into my thoughts, let me apologize ahead of time if I say something that is deemed offensive out of ignorance to anyone who listens to our podcast. I am a white male that grew up in the rural South, small town, Westminster, South Carolina. Train tracks ran through it. You had the black families that lived on one side, the white families that lived on the other. And I never knew what racism was. I mean, you know, my best friend, my entire life, one of my best friends, Sonia Jenkins, she and I were friends our entire life, so much so that people talked that she and I were dating and going together behind the scenes or whatever. And, you know, I remember Sonia and I laughing and saying if just only they knew, and we didn't care if they knew. You know, I had so many black friends growing up, and my parents never said, you can't play with them. You can't bring them to our home. There was none of that. I mean, my mother won Mother of the Year when I was at Butler Hill Elementary, along with this black kid that I went to school with, John Oglesby. His mother won as well. And, you know, I think that that says it all to me, that a black woman raising her child, a white woman raising her children, and both of these women were given the same accolades. So I just didn't see a lot of it. Now, was it there? Yes, because, you know, my best friend for my whole life and that I'm still friends with today, and she and I talk and we message and we laugh. You know, Stephanie Grooms was and is my dearest, dearest friend for all of life. And she was one of the very few that dated outside of her race. And I remember helping her go meet her boyfriend and lying to her parents saying that, you know, she was with me when they would call and, you know, things like that. And we laugh about it today. And she has since, you know, she has raised three beautiful daughters. You know, her oldest daughter, Tiffany, is a registered nurse, is doing extremely well. You know, then she has, you know, Jordan and Tiff, you know, and Alicia that, again, stunning girls, but she raised them as a single mother. And so that was just something that was never a question to me that I should discriminate against someone because of their skin color or because they didn't have what I came from. Now, let me be very clear, folks, when I say they didn't have what I had when I came, you know, based on what I came from. I grew up in this small town, and there was not a huge disparagement of income. My parents worked in a textile factory. You know, we grew up in a 3,500 square foot house. We got, my brother and I got, you know, new cars when we started driving. But my parents worked 16 hours a day, every day, both of them, you know, 16 for my dad, 16 for my mom, so that they could pay for these things. And, you know, my brother's, you know, his best friend was, you know, was Marty Moss, and he was black. So we never had that. We knew it existed because I would be called an in-lover or, you know, whatever. And that just wasn't something that I was going to kind of fall into. And because, I mean, I've posted some things on my social media, and so many people have come back and said, Todd, it's not just black lives that matter. All lives matter. Well, I want to, and I don't want to lambast anyone for saying that. I just want you to kind of listen to what I'm going to say. Black lives matter. All lives should matter. So when you say that all lives matter, if that truly was shared by our world as a whole, we wouldn't be having these conversations. If all lives matter, we would have never had slavery. We would have never had lynchings. We would have never had racial profiling. We would have never had police departments saying target African-American and Hispanic communities. It's where the high crime is. It's where the drugs are, et cetera. If all lives mattered, we would be treating each other as God intended for us to treat each other, and that is as brothers and sisters in Christ. So if you are offended because I don't jump on the bandwagon of saying that all lives matter and that I'm a race traitor or whatever, then I hope that gives you your explanation, because I want to also be very clear. I'm proud to be white. I grew up never knowing that I should be ashamed of it.
But you are ashamed of the way that certain people are.
I was going to get
acting.
There. Yes. You know, I'm proud of who I am, just like my friends who are African-American or black, as whichever the preference is that you know, you the appropriate term to use is. Just as they will say, I love my skin color. I love who I am. I love the way God made me. I love the way God made me. Am I proud of the oppression that comes along with being white? No, I'm not. I don't need anyone to tell me that I have a grandchild of color, unless I'm colorblind, which I'm not, folks. I already know that I have a grandchild of color. I also go to bed for the first time in my life after having a grandchild of color. I go to bed every night with the fear of how she's going to be perceived, with the knowledge of knowing that she may walk into a room with a white girl, and because she is a child of color, not be seen the way the white girl is seen. Now, I want to be very clear. I'm not here to racially divide, because our country has done a hell of a job at that. It's probably the only thing that our country has ever successfully done to completion, and that is to divide the races. God did not intend for us to be divided. God placed us all here on one earth. Because in his heart, I can only assume he was hopeful that we would lift each other up. And that's not what we're doing, folks. It's not the peaceful protesters that are looting. Looting is stealing. Destruction of personal property is a crime. So if we're going to have one law, then one law should apply to everyone. But what I would say to you is, in raising my children, I never went past, how many times would I tell our kids to not do something?
Twice.
After the second time, three strikes in a ball game, in baseball, you're out. On the third time, you got your ass tore up. So what I'm going to say today is, how many times does the African-American community have to say, enough is enough? They slap you on your wrist one time. Okay, that should get your attention. The second time, you should be wide, woke, and awake. The third time, you get your ass slapped. So all of this protesting that's going on, I am all for peaceful protesting. I'm not for attacking police officers, harming other individuals. I'm not for destruction of personal property. But more importantly than not being for destruction of personal property, I'm not for an innocent black man being murdered. And that's what took place. I don't want to hear about George Floyd, God rest his soul, trying to pass a $20 counterfeit bill. It's a crime. It's a crime that should be punishable the same way as if I did it or any Caucasian person. If you're trying to pass counterfeit money, it's a crime.
Which but they have not even determined that he knew it was.
Right,
they
exactly.
Don't even know.
I mean, that's the same thing as me going out here. Didn't we get a counterfeit bill one time from the bank? It was a $100 bill.
Yeah, and we had to return it.
We had to return it. Mm-hmm. And the bank didn't even pick up on it.
Right.
So this man could have been given a $20 bill in change. He's going to buy something, and now he's on the ground with a knee in his back, a knee in his neck, handcuffed, saying, "I can't breathe." Folks, at what point does that not humanize you? At what point do you not realize that you have the life of another human being in your hands and you are watching it fade away? That is law enforcement? No, it's not. That's a bad person. That's an inhumane person. That's a person who has a history.
Yes, we know that this man has had a lengthy history.
And what he did.
Improprieties, of breaking the law, of doing things that being reprimanded. Why did he still have a badge?
Exactly.
But there has to be some, they have to have some, I don't even know what the word is.
Ramifications, yes, for his actions.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think that when you look at what his person, you know, what his personnel record will show, he should have already been terminated. His badge should have already been removed. He should not be receiving a pension.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way that we, and I have learned this through my whole ordeal with dealing with the state of Georgia, with dealing with the Georgia Department of Revenue, with dealing with so many attorneys that are working for us, and being told when I said I want them held accountable. I want them held accountable for trying to destroy our reputation, trying to destroy our name, trying to make us look like we're fraudulent. I want them held accountable. And what I keep being told is, Mr. Chrisley, our court systems are set up to hold people accountable for damages civilly, and that's monetarily. So rather than, you know, the government bailing the police department out, try taking it from the pension fund.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Take these settlements from the police's pension funds, mm-hmm, and then it's going to cause them to police each other's behavior.
That's right.
And, you know, I was watching on the news last night, I believe it was five or six police officers with the Atlanta Police Department,
yeah,
were arrested. Several of these police officers are African-American that were arrested.
But wasn't this against a black female college student?
I think it was several. It was, mm-hmm, it was several different incidences.
The one I read was.
But you've got African-American police officers knowing this is happening to their own people, and they do it themselves. So, folks, this kind of abuse is systemic. What's going on is systemic. It is something, the system is broken. People get these badges and they automatically believe they're above the law. They're not there to protect the law or to enforce the law. They are to be above the law. And every police officer is not bad. We have had some wonderful experiences with police officers, and we've had some negative. You know, we were coming back from Florida, and a police officer,
oh my gosh,
pulled Julie over, and then I pulled over in front of her, and he comes running up to the passenger side door.
Let me say this. He comes running up to the passenger side door. He never said who he was, what he was doing. He literally just started screaming. Like, I thought it was a bad movie.
Right.
Like, he just started screaming.
And he was like, "Who do you think you are? Who the fuck are you to pull over? Why are you being so nosy when I'm pulling her over?" And Chase was sitting in the front seat, and I looked at him and I said, "Sir, that's my wife that you're pulling over. We're following each other back home. So I'm going to stop to make sure she's okay. You've been tailgating her for 20 miles. I said, "No, sir. She just got over in the left lane, and I pulled it, and I got over in the left lane behind her to pass the semi-truck that was in front of her that was not going the speed limit." And he just looked at me and screamed again and said, "You better be glad I don't write your ass up." This was what this white police officer said to me, and I've broken no law.
No.
He then goes back to Julia's car, and what did he say to you? Yeah.
He's like, why are you riding? We don't ride in the left lane. I said, sir, I was just passing that semi-truck. I mean, and how was I supposed to know that that was your husband? This man says he's your husband. How am I supposed to know that? I said, well, sir, you never asked me that.
You should have said, tune into USA Network on Tuesday nights at 10/9 Central. Smartass.
I've never experienced anything. Now, keep in mind, neither one of us got a ticket. He never asked. But now
he just pulled off.
After
he says all of this, he jumps back in his car and literally spins his tires, slinging mud and dirt everywhere.
It was the craziest thing I have ever experienced in my life. I mean, I've been pulled over, whether it's for speeding or whatever, in the past. And, you know, they typically come up to your window, ma'am. Can I have your license and registration, please? Do you know why I'm pulling you over? I mean, that's kind of how I've been handled in the past. This guy was like, it was the most bizarre, craziest thing I have ever experienced in my life.
And we're still trying to identify this police officer because it happened in McClinney, Florida. Yeah. And we're still trying to find out. Surely there's a record of him saying, I'm pulling this vehicle over with the tag number. So we're trying to find that out. But the point of telling you that is we've had some great experiences with police officers, and then we've had a handful of not so great. But what I will say is I have never been treated poorly by an African-American police officer. Every bad incident that we've had has been by a white police officer. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that I'm a race traitor. That's not to say that I'm advocating bad behavior, you know, for the black community and dismissing it for the white or vice versa. What I'm saying is personal experience. So let me hit you with something else that's going to be very personal to you. If you're white and you grew up in a white community, in an era of this country to where there was drilled into you that you're superior to the African-American community, they're beneath you, whatever, races don't mix, et cetera, et cetera. If you grew up in that time period and you think that you're never going to have to deal with interracial mixing, then you're wrong. Because do you love your child unconditionally? Because if your answer to that question is yes, I love my child unconditionally, then you must at that point love your child enough to respect the decision as to who they love. Did I ever believe I was going to have a biracial grandchild? I never thought about it. It didn't cross my mind. And folks, the reason that it didn't cross my mind is because I didn't care. You know, I get so many people coming at me on social media saying that literally they have called my granddaughter monkey, Brillo head, spook, the N-word, you name it. We've dealt with it since we brought her on our show. We had someone attack us on Facebook that said this was the most beautiful family on television, and then their son had to screw it up by bringing a raisinette up in it. Do you remember that, Julie? Mm-hmm. That's just some of the things that we've dealt with. But let me tell you something. Those ignorant people that make those comments to me, they don't change my love for my granddaughter. They make me love her more. My love for her is harder. It's more convicted. I don't love Chloe more than I love Jackson. So there is no more. It's not that I love her more. I'm raising her. She's being raised by me every day as a parent. So that does change the dynamics. But someone else's opinion will never cause me to love or not love who I want to love or not love. So if you're out here thinking, oh, I've got this perfect white family and we're going to all kind of come running over the hills like in The Sound of Music and just, you know, think that that's going to be your life, you don't know who your child's going to fall in love with. You don't know that. I had the most wonderful experience with this young black man yesterday at Lululemon mm-hmm. here in Nashville. What did I come home and say? What did I call you from the car and say?
Sir. said exactly that. You had the most amazing experience.
I mean, this young man, black young man working at Lululemon there at in Green Hills in Nashville. Is that considered Green Hills?
Yes.
Okay. And you're having to stand outside because Lululemon is doing, you know, is practicing social distancing. And so I got to go in, and this woman comes up to me, and she's battling colon cancer. And she came up to me and she started talking, and she's, you know, was telling me, you know, that she was so excited to meet me and, you know, so forth and so on. And she said, you know, I have watched your show so, you know, for so long, ever since you came out. Her name is Ann Hazelhurst, and she's from Jackson, Mississippi. And I love this woman. I love this woman. She's battling colon cancer, and she said, you know, they've told her kind of what her time frame is, and she's a mother, and she has her children to leave behind. And she looked at me and she said, I know where I'm going. I've told my children not to be mad at God. But meeting you here today has changed my spirit. It has caused me to feel better today. I'm so excited to meet you. I watched your journey with Julie and the breast cancer and how you took care of Julie. And my husband has done the same for me. And I said, God bless you. And she changed my life yesterday, folks. Ann Hazelhurst from Jackson, Mississippi, changed my life yesterday. And she has no idea what she did for me. And here she is thinking I was doing everything for her. But in the midst of this conversation, this young black man comes over and says, sir, can I take your items? Because my arms were running over because I was buying stuff for Chase for his birthday. And so I said, thank you so much. I can take it to the counter if you'd like. And he said, no, sir. He said, I'll take it. I had the best in-depth conversation with this young man about race and about where we are in this country, and about the fact that he grew up in, you know, that he was born in Detroit but raised in Nashville, and how his parents are hard workers, and how what their belief structure is and what mine is. And the thing that we both agreed upon was that we believe in peaceful protest, not destruction of personal property, not looting or whatever. But we had for that 20 minutes that he and I spoke, we had a common connection. And I never looked at him and thought, wow, I'm having a conversation with a black man. Now, I'm sure he may have said, wow, I'm actually having a conversation with a white guy who semi gets it. Now, I want to be very clear, folks. I don't know that I get it in its entirety. But what I do know that I get is that I value human life. I value this young man. He and I shook hands when we left. In a pandemic, folks, we shook hands when everyone's wearing a mask. What I do know is that I want my children to see the way that I treat others. I don't want to tell them how I treat others. I want them to see how I treat others. I mean, I look back over the course of my life and over all of the black friends that I have, and there's a number of them. I would say that my friend group is very diversified. And I think, what else should I be doing? And I've reached out to some of my friends, and they have said, Todd, you're on the right track. You keep doing you. And if you keep doing you and you talk about that, then you're going to change lives. And folks, that's what I'm doing today. I'm not telling you that because you live in rural America in a white community that you need to move into an African-American community. What I am saying is that if you did, you might understand some of the plight. I've never lived in an African-American community, but I've had African-American neighbors in some of the neighborhoods that we've lived in. And I got along fine with them, folks. They were not harming me. They were keeping their property up. They were doing as good or better than what I was doing. Their kids went to the same school, wore the same clothes, was doing the same sports, and we didn't have a problem. So I look at the destruction that has happened in Charleston, South Carolina, and here in our own state, you know, Nashville, and in Atlanta, and in Los Angeles, and Chicago, and Minneapolis, and all of the business owners that are mom and pop operations that was already struggling through the pandemic, and now this hits them. they will probably not come back. So that, folks, is the American dream dying on the vine unnecessarily, just like George Floyd died on the pavement unnecessarily. But businesses can be replaced. George Floyd's life won't be. And I don't want to make it all about George Floyd. I want to make it about every innocent person who has suffered abuse at the hands of the legal system, whether it be in a court sentencing, whether it be police brutality, you know, whether it be corruption, you know, whatever you've dealt with, my heart goes out to you. For every family that has lost a child, every Black family that has lost a child, my heart aches for you because you are clearly stronger than what I believe that I am, because I don't know that I could do that. And I guess none of us know what we can do until God puts us there and shows us our own strength. I am embarrassed and hurt that I live in a country to where these things continue to go on. But we won't solve the problem with violence. You don't attack a violent situation with violence. The only way you cure hate is through love. The only way you get rid of darkness is by bringing in the light. And that's what we need to be doing. We need to be bringing in the light. You know, how many times do we have to see an African-American male sentenced to 25 years for rape and they do 15, then you find out that the DNA sat there for 20 years or 15 years before you ever tested it? How many times does, okay, well, this kid was seen running away from the incident, so we're going to grab him, and he's the Black kid who got grabbed. You didn't see the other Indian or Asian or white kid who might have been a little faster or might have been a little cagier about it. What I'm saying to you is we don't need to focus our energy on the color of someone's skin. We need to focus our energy on who we are as a human being and how we want to be treated. If we literally just look within ourselves and say, man, that made me feel so good when my neighbor said, your yard looks great. Or man, I'm so proud to be your neighbor because you take such great care of your property. That made you feel good. Now you turn around and make someone feel good. I've raised our children their entire life to tell them that you have one time to make a first impression. And when you meet that person, if they don't walk away and feel that you have enriched their life in that 10 minutes that you met them or 20 or whatever, then you failed. When I meet someone, I try to ask them about themselves, not answer questions about me. I want to know about the person who's interested in me.
Everyone knows that I love my kids to death, but schooling at home has been quite the adjustment for Chloe, that is. You know, Grayson does online school and things have just moved completely smooth. We have had no issues. But Chloe, it's been a little more challenging. And, you know, it's times like these have inspired me to check out Laurel Springs. Online learning might be new for your family, but Laurel Springs has been doing this for nearly 30 years. As the experts in online learning, Laurel Springs has the tools and the curriculum your child needs to maintain their learning unhindered by whatever the future holds. Their flexible learning programs designed for students in kindergarten through 12th grade offers challenging and diverse courses, including summer courses, people. You know if you're like me, I feel like Chloe missed out on so much. So we are definitely going to delve into the summer classes, even if she goes to a traditional school in the fall. And Laurel Springs is accredited by the Western Association of Schools and Colleges and Cognia, which means their transcripts are recognized by colleges and universities worldwide. So register your child at laurelsprings.com/cc and received a waived registration fee. That's laurelsprings.com/cc for your waived registration fee. That's laurelsprings.com/cc.
So, with that being said, I mean, I have kind of been on my soapbox for now 31 minutes. Julie, would you like to add?
No, I agree with you totally. And I think as we close out this segment, that something that I read that I completely agree with, that if we would all realize that it's not white versus black, black versus white, it's everyone versus racism.
Exactly. It's not a white or black thing. It's a racism thing. And, you know, I think that we really, when you're looking at it, I mean, you and I laid there in our bed, literally emotionally drained and heartbroken because, folks, guess what? It's a secret. No one else in the world knows this. We have a grandchild that is biracial. She is a child of color. And we have to explain this to her. Mm-hmm. She has to be taught that this is what's happening in her country. In her country, folks, she has as much right to be here as her white daddy does, as I do, as any white person here in this world or in this country, you know, that's in this country. She has as much right to be here mm-hmm. as you do. So we have to explain that to her, and no child should have to have an explanation as to why they're being mistreated because of something that they can't control.
Yep.
And that, folks, is a job that Julie and I and the rest of our family have to deal with every day. And we're a white family trying to get it right with a grandchild of color. And we fail sometimes, and sometimes we exceed the expectation. And those are the times that we celebrate. Mm-hmm. And when we fail, those are the times that we dig in and work harder.
And we reach out to people who can help us.
Yes.
I personally reach out to my friend Mari, who is my dearest friend, who is a black mother, who has raised three amazing children. And I look to her. I look to her to help me. I look to her for advice. I look for her to teach me how to be better and how to be better for Chloe. Because I'm telling you, she got it right with her kids.
Yes, 100% she got it right with her kids. And so, you know, I applaud Mari for that. I love that woman dearly, and she's been a wonderful friend to you. And folks, she's a black woman. And one who's been in our life since our kids went to school.
We were pregnant together with yes. our youngest.
And guess what, folks? Julie had her baby exact same way that Mari had her baby. Mm. And they've all grown up together. And Mari has succeeded beyond the American dream of succeeding when it comes to raising children. You know, her son.
I put her children against any other kids in this world. I don't care what color you are. I don't care if you're white, if you're black, if you're Asian, if you're Indian. I put her kids, not because they're black children, but because they were raised right, because she made it a priority for her children to be respectful. She made it a priority for her children to be educated. Now, it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with how we raise our children. And it goes back to, it's not black versus white, white versus black.
It's the investment you put into your child.
It's raising right, raising your kids right, which has nothing to do with it. But unfortunately, even though her son is one of the most brilliant people I have ever met in my life, I mean, from graduating from Holy Cross to London School of Economics to working in cryptocurrency.
A young black man,
I don't even know what that is. But, you know, I had this conversation with her. But he still has to be careful when he walks out the door. He still has to be careful if he's pulled over by a policeman. They don't know that. They don't know who he is. But because of the color of his skin,
they don't care who he is.
They assume who he is.
Right.
And then on the other on the other side of things, she's got a 13-year-old who is really good friends with Grayson that has no idea, that was over playing with children in the neighborhood, a primarily white neighborhood, who has no idea. So, you know, I think it's both ends of the spectrum. But with that being said,
I think that, you know, I remember an incident when, you know, because all of our kids went to a private school, and I remember an incident that involved one of Mari's daughters that was a racial incident with a faculty member. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. And Mari called me to get involved, and I made a phone call, and I got involved. And we put that to rest quick. But Mari raised her kids, folks, to know their Black culture, but to know that their Black culture is, she was raising them in a predominantly white area, and she made her kids be alert and aware.
Yes.
And
also be proud of where they come from.
Yes, and who they are.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And Mari is a stunning woman who has always carried herself like a lady. You know, now Mari, don't get it twisted now. I mean, I love her for a lot of different reasons than Julie does. I mean, Mari will snatch a wig off if she has to, but she tries not to put herself in a situation to have to snatch wigs. And, you know, I think that for me, I learned so much and continue to learn so much from her.
Right.
You've talked to her all the time.
Yeah.
But I learned vicariously through you some of the things that she has taught you.
Right.
And we are better for it. We're better because of these people being in our lives, folks. So anytime your child can be immersed in a situation to where they become better people, that's a great win for you. That's a great win for you. And if your child is being taught to see the color of someone's heart versus their skin, you're making the world a better place. That is your legacy, folks. Our children is the legacy that we leave behind. So do you leave behind a continued generation of racism, or do you leave behind children who abhor that whole notion of racism? Do we leave behind children with good, kind, decent hearts? I want to be known not for the amount of money that I left my children, but for the heart that I left my children. And at the end of the day, I may die penniless. It'll piss Chase off. A couple of the others, too. But
you won't die poor.
I won't die poor. You're exactly right, Julian. I love you for saying that. I will not die poor. You know why, folks? Because God has me. God, for the first time in my life, my walk with Christ is closer than it's ever been. I don't walk in fear. I walk in faith. I am closer to my wife. I'm closer to my children. You know, what we've been through prior to all of this has been horrific. But what we're going through now is like something I've never seen. I mean, you know, and going through all the stuff that I've dealt with the Georgia Department of Revenue, I mean, you know, Josh Waits, Amy Doherty, I mean, there's a guy, David Ward, that worked at the Department of Revenue. All of these people came from Clayton County, and I just read an article today to where David Ward had to hire an attorney when he was with Clayton County to represent a race situation that he was involved in, but yet he was transplanted to the Department of Revenue. I get to find out about, you know, Amy Doherty and this gun shooting that she was involved in and how she celebrates the kill every year. You know,
she what?
Yeah, that's what was told us. So let me preface, folks, I'm repeating what I have been told. I'll have you the facts next week. But Amy Doherty was involved while in Clayton County in a shooting that killed a man. And every year it's called Celebrate the Kill. Now, she, folks, is working for the Department of Revenue. So this is the story that was brought back to me, as I tell y'all every week. We get these phone calls, we get these messages on Instagram and Facebook and people reaching out to us. Now this individual has come forward, you know, with copies of these, or rather photographs of these notes and things that Amy has written and that Jeff Mitchell in his journal has written and things like that. And then he proceeds to, this individual proceeds to tell me about this celebration of this kill. No one should be celebrating taking another human's life.
No.
But no. Amy Doherty Hines, obviously, and I want to preface, I'm repeating what I've been told, and I don't like to repeat things that are going to harm people if there's no factual basis for them. I've been told that there is factual basis for this. If there's not, then I apologize, and I will retract it next week, but I'm getting all the documentation hopefully by Friday, and I'll fill everyone in on that. But, you know, when you have someone like Amy Doherty Hines who's sitting there committing felonies, and these are just the felonies that we know about, and she's still allowed to sit in that position that she's in right now with access to people's backgrounds, their histories. They have prosecuted other people in the state of Georgia for committing these crimes, yet she is still sitting on her job. Now, I'm going to make these things public, and I'm giving them to the press over the course of the next few weeks so that they can put all of this stuff out there so that we can figure out why the Attorney General, Chris Carr, has not demanded that charges be brought against these individuals. Amy Doherty Hines, Katie Colvin Vansell, Jeff Mitchell, Josh Waits. I mean, Josh Waits went after an African-American sheriff in Clayton County and testified on the stand that this man was taking money from his own campaign and putting it in his personal account, stealing funds. You do understand, folks, that Josh Waits has been accused of stealing funds from the taxpayers of the state of Georgia. You do understand, folks, that this man lied on his application. You do understand, folks, that this man destroyed evidence in our case. He destroyed all of his text messages, all of his emails, everything. Now, let's everyone kind of put our thinking caps on here and realize people don't destroy evidence unless it incriminates themselves or because it helps the other side. So you figure that out. But the point of getting off on the whole bandwagon of the Georgia Department of Revenue is that you've got your racist sitting right there in that office as well. And I'm going to out that in the next week or so. So I hope and pray for each and every person that listens to this podcast, that follows us on social media, that knows what our heart is, that you know that we are here for the people. We're here not just for white people, black people, Asian people, Indian, whatever. We are here for every human being on this earth. You are my brother and sister. And if you're hungry, I will feed you. I will sit down at a table with you and let you share with what I with what I'm getting ready to eat. You know, if I can help you, I will help you. I won't hinder you and I won't enable you, but I will try to help you get on a path that's going to help you better yourself. So I hope that no one is offended by what I've said today, but if you are, then it has caused you to think. So if I offended you to the point to where it causes you to think about the way you deal with people every day, then I'm glad I pissed you off today. First caller, please.
Hi, Todd. Hi, Julie. This is Jan from Indiana, and I just wanted to say that I love your shows, love the podcast. I feel like you guys speak to the truth, to the heart of the matter. So I have a question. Do you guys ever worry about Chloe being raised in an all-white family and environment, and I don't know what her history is with her biological mother. The reason I'm asking, I have an adult daughter who is biracial. She's 35, and then I have my oldest son is 28, and my youngest son is 24. My oldest son is a police officer. And right now, there is a lot of strife between my daughter and my son as far as with everything that's going on in the country. She has said to me that her family is racist. She was raised, of course, and I'm white, in a predominantly white, you know, neighborhood family. And I guess my question is, I'm not sure what to do to try and repair the relationship between my daughter, who's 35, and my oldest son, who is a police officer. She just has such hatred, animosity for the police right now, which is understandable with everything that, you know, is going on and has gone on in Minnesota. As a parent, I'm caught in the middle, and I'm trying to figure out what I can do to try and bridge the gap between my son and my daughter. I love them both equally. I love them both with all of my heart. So, yes, I'm just trying to ask if you guys ever worry about Chloe and at this point in time, you know, being raised in a white household environment. I felt like I did a good job with my daughter. I'm a single mom. She's a college graduate. My son is a college graduate. So any input you could give me or advice as a mother, what to do to try and bridge the gap between my children. It just breaks my heart. Any help would be greatly appreciated. Love you guys. Love your show. Have a blessed day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jan, for calling in. Do we have concerns over Chloe being raised in a household of all white people? No. Because she's being raised in a household filled with love. But she's also exposed to many African-American black families that we're friends with, that she sees. Her nanny is African-American. And we have made sure that she knows who her biological mother is. No, her mother is not involved in her life and has not been for many, many years. And I'm not going to discuss that situation because that's a private situation that, you know, I'm not going to speak poorly about Chloe's biological mother.
We're raising Chloe the same way we raised our other children, mm-hmm. not as, okay, we're raising her as
we're
as
not
a
loving
young adult. As
we're
a
not loving child. Her any differently.
No.
We're not feeding her any differently.
No.
We're not educating her any differently. We're not spiritually feeding her any differently.
Right.
But what we are doing differently that we never had to do with our white children is we're having to make sure that she knows where she comes from, how she's viewed, how society sees her, and that she will be viewed as a black female. And that bothers me because I don't want anyone labeling my children. I don't want anyone out here saying, oh, well, he's a white kid of privilege. I've had so many people, I posted a picture of Chase for his birthday, and there were so many people that came back and said, what will this kid ever know about the hard knocks of life? He's got daddy's money and white privilege and your skin color. I've had that multiple times. Folks, Chase works every day. Now, just because he looks like a screw up on the show at times, it's because he is screwing up. But Chase films this show 26 episodes a year, plus 8 episodes of Growing Up Chrisley, 44 weeks a year this kid is filming. And this is 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day. He's working. He gets a check for doing what he does. I don't support him financially. He supports himself. I don't support Savannah financially. She supports herself. I support Grayson and Chloe. So, Jan, to go back to your question about what can you do, I think that both your daughter and your son, who are siblings, have to love you enough to come together. And during that time of coming together, hopefully they will see each other's different, you know, each other's side. Your son, who is a police officer, his profession is being attacked right now. And with all due respect, Jan, rightfully so. Because it only takes one apple to spoil the bunch. And we got more than just one bad apple in the police force. We got buckets of bad apples.
But I think it also goes back to where we are failing as a country, is that you can have different views and still love someone. You can have different views and still be respectful of someone and respect our differences. You know, accentuate our differences. And that's what makes this world what it is. But it comes down to respect. I can respect you and not feel the same way you feel.
Exactly.
I can respect you and not believe the same way that you believe. And it doesn't have to divide us, but yet it can make us be greater. And I think that's what has to happen.
And, you know, I want to be very clear, Jan, that, you know, when we got Chloe, we were grateful to have Chloe and blessed to have her, but we had to start parenting again. When we were out of the diaper phase, we were out of diaper rashes and ear infections and, you know, cutting teeth and all of those things that go along with having a new baby. We were out of that. But please understand that when we got our granddaughter, she was covered in a diaper rash that took almost 3 months with the care of a pediatrician and different kind of baths and creams and whatever to get her cleared up. She was hungry. She was not in the best place. And we took her because we could not stand of the thoughts when we found out that was going on, that was actually happening. So I think that we have to love each other. But your son also has to understand that he's looking at the situation that's going on in this country right now through the lens of his profession, and I'm assuming of being a white male, because you specified your daughter is biracial. You didn't say that about your sons. So your son is looking at this through the eyes of a white male, and your daughter is looking at this through the eyes of a young woman who's perceived as black in this country. So we are going to continue to love Chloe. We're not raising her to the standards of what anyone else in this country thinks we should raise her to. I don't need anyone coming at me and asking me, what do I know about raising a black child and dealing with black hair and what have you? You know what? I know a gracious plenty now because I've been doing it for 6.5 damn years. That's how much I know. So if I don't know it, you better believe that Kim Kimble does know about black hair. You better believe that the people that I take my granddaughter to knows about her hair. You better believe that if I'm lacking in something when it comes to culture for my granddaughter, our crew is predominantly African-American, female, and she gets fed that way. I remember speaking to a member of our crew, Angel, and I got so hot. Do you remember this conversation at Brick Tops? Mm-hmm. She said, you need to understand, Todd, when Chloe gets pulled over, she's not getting pulled over like Julia's getting pulled over. She's getting pulled over as a black female. And I said, what are you talking about? If she gets pulled over, I'm assuming she's getting pulled over because she's violated a traffic law. And Angel had to educate me, and it pissed me off. But because she pissed me off, it made me dig deeper, and right, it caused me to research, and it caused me to figure out where she was coming from. And I love Angel dearly, but she opened my eyes.
Which, like what I was saying about Maury, I thank God that we have surrounded ourselves with people who teach us. And who love us enough to teach us.
And to correct us.
Because if we say or do something, we don't knowingly do it to ever make someone feel less than or to be inappropriate or what, you know, misspeak. But I'm grateful that we have these people like Angel, like Mari, who
hold us accountable.
Hold us accountable and who are in our lives forever.
Exactly. So, you know, Jan, my heart goes out to you because I know how hard it is to have children fighting amongst themselves, and it's the hardest place for a parent to be because you love both of your kids, and then they're both going at each other like they're strangers in the street. So, you know, both of your kids need to, you know, you may have to slap the shit out of both of them to get their attention, but they both should come together because they share the same mother. And if your son truly believes in his position and with everything that's going on in this country, and then he should be able to see the plight that your daughter is expressing and what she's gone through, because you don't know what she's gone through other than what she's told you that she's gone through. You don't know how many times she's been marginalized, minimized. You don't know that unless she's told you about it, because you're not standing in every line that she's standing in when someone else gets served before her. So, nor is your son, if he is a white male. So I hope that that helps you, and I hope that you guys can reconcile, you know, the differences that you have. And the greatest tool that you're working with is love and respect. If you have those two things, we can resolve everything. I truly believe that. So, folks, on that note, we are out of time. I thank each and every one of you for tuning in every week to Chrisley Confessions, to tuning into Chrisley Knows Best, Growing Up Chrisley, to listening to all of my, you know, me getting on my soapbox and preaching about things that bother me. We're not going to solve this problem that we're having right now. We're not going to solve it overnight, folks, because we've been doing it for hundreds of years. But what we can start with today is making a commitment to ourselves and those that are around us that we are here to set an example for, that I will love you, respect you, and cherish you as God's child. And if we do those things, the world will eventually become a better place. Julie?
I agree.
So, folks, until next week, take care. Take care of each other. And from our home to yours, we send nothing but love, compassion, and respect.